Good morning and welcome to Back Chat. I'm Brian Curtis.
And I'm Hugh Tewitt, and today we're asking, what's the future of our power?
The government has just launched a consultation paper on the future development of Hong Kong's electricity market.
One of the possibilities under close investigation is the scrapping of the 42-year monopoly enjoyed by Hong Kong Electric and China Light and Power.
The goal of the review is to find a way to provide electricity to the consumer at a reasonable price.
But criticism's already been raised over the fact that no reference has been made to demand management or even the possibility of an energy-saving watchdog.
So should more competition be encouraged in the face of the expiration of the two current companies' scheme of control agreements in 2008?
And do we need to set up an independent regulatory authority, or should the government remain the regulator?
Well, you can call us on 2338-8266. We'd like to hear your views. You can email us at backchat@rthk.org.hk and tell us what you think.
And joining us on the program today, we have David Webb, who's the editor of website.com, Otto Poon, chairman of the Energy Advisory Committee, Annalise Connell, who's vice chairperson of Clear the Air, Fred Lee, legislative councillor, and joining us on the line, the deputy secretary for Environment, Development and Labour, Economic Development, Miranda Chu. We'll start with Ms. Chu. Good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, everybody in the room.
Can you introduce the consultation then? What's up for grabs? What are you looking at in it?
Well, as you know, that reliable electricity supply is vital to the development, the economic development of Hong Kong, as well as the...
That's unfortunate.
Reliable phone lines as well, I think, would...
I think what she was going to say, and this really is something that Stephen Ipp said yesterday, was that we're really looking at four things. Reliable delivery of electricity and power, safe delivery, reasonable prices, and taking a fourth point would be taking a look at the impact on the environment. So those are four very important considerations. How much will it cost consumers? But we also want to have a concern about what the effect is on the environment, and then making sure that it stays as it has been over the past 15 years, reliable and safe. So let's go to, well, I guess we're trying to get... Ms. Chu back on the line. Can we go to Starry Lee? Is Starry Lee with us now?
No, she'll be joining us after 9 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
Let's perhaps Otto Poon. Would you agree with those priorities?
Hello, Miranda's back.
I'm sorry. Have we been cut off?
Yes, we were. Yes.
Okay. Sorry. Would you like the chairman to say first? You know, the chairman of our Energy Advisory Committee.
Okay. Chairman, with you.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm in
yes.
the room.
Yes, Otto Poon, yes.
Right, thank you. Well, I think in the past 20, 30 years, I think Hong Kong has been blessed with a very reliable and safe power supply. I think this come with, I suppose, a cost. Because people have been saying that the energy price is a little bit high. But I think everything is relative when we compare with other major cities. How high are we or how low are we? But at least we have done two things right. Number one, reliability is very good. Safety is very good. And even pollution, in our own pollution control, is fairly well. Not too bad. So I think this consultation paper is truly a open-minded consult paper. The government do not have any preconceived ideas as what direction to go. But to look at the overseas experience, look at the existing scenarios, and invite the public to come up with their views, their ideas, so that the government can plan their way forward as to what to do next.
Miranda Chu, yes. you were listing some of the priorities as you see them in the consultation in our future, future shape of the electricity market.
Right. Are
they your priorities, or do you think that they are genuinely the ones of the people of Hong Kong?
I think they are both the government's priorities as well as the people in Hong Kong's priorities. If I may just, draw your attention to a survey that we did, one in 2003 and another one in 2004, where we have surveyed the households in Hong Kong as well as the what we call the non-domestic household users, that is the establishments, the commercial industrial operations. The feedback we got from them when we asked them, what is the priority in terms of electricity supply for you? They unanimously come back with reliability of supply, being the top priority. So as I've just said, reliable supply of electricity is the government's priority. And of course, reasonable prices is also, you know, one thing that we look at. And in the surveys that I've referred to just now, people also refer to note prices. But of course, they are not the top priorities as such. The other priority for the government in doing this review and in terms of our energy policy is the is to minimize the environmental impact. In the surveys that we have we have conducted and I've referred to just now, similarly, the feedback that we got is that people would want to be able to have reliable supply of electricity at reasonable prices, and at the same time, they would like to ensure that the environment would not be adversely affected as well.
Now, when you talk about reasonable prices and reasonable profits to be made by the companies, did you ask the public, for example, what they thought was a reasonable rate of return?
Well, this is precisely what we are seeking to do during this consultation exercise. We have set out in our consultation paper the issues about, you know, the rate of return, and we have listed in the paper the issues that are relevant to this consideration. Of course, you know, the basic considerations is firstly the base to which, you know, the return is to be calculated, and then related to that is the permitted rate of return, the point that you have just referred to. And in the paper, we have identified these issues, and we have also listed the sort of, you know, ways for dealing with these issues. That is the way for setting the rate base and the rate for setting the return. And we are seeking the public's views as to what they think about it. And of course, in addition to that, we can also have the sort of rate of return based on performance. That's why that is the performance of the power company in the supplying of electricity. And that's why we have also listed that as one of the things that we are seeking the views of the public on.
All right. Fred Lee, what do you think is a reasonable rate of return?
When you look at the power company in other countries, you read the figures, 6 to 8%. Australia, UK, and from the last 10, 15 years, the two power company enjoyed 13.5%. And even 15, if the investment come from the shareholders. So you see, the blue power company already enjoy quite a high rate of return.
But Mr. Lee, isn't it a very different situation? This is a really small place. You don't have the economies of scale. You have to import all of your coal and your oil. It's really not fair to compare Hong Kong with the United States or Australia. Australia and Canada, for instance, those are places that have huge natural resources.
I think it's always trying to use what kind of yardstick you try to compare. When you use the standard, then you say the other countries are referenced, and you say Hong Kong place is too small, so they should enjoy high rate of return. But when you look at the other, you know, calculation, say return on turnover, the return on the turnover, on the investment, they already enjoy a high rate compared with other blue chips in Hong Kong.
Can I just ask Miranda Chu, what do you think about that?
Well, as we have pointed out, there is no sort of universal model for the electricity market around the world. And as you will notice that, as you have just rightly pointed out, the situation in Hong Kong could be very different. Apart from the market situation being different, there is also the difference in the business ownership as well as the market structure. And the way that the business, the particular companies operate the business, say they might be engaging apart from electricity supplied, supplying gas or other telecommunication services as well. And of course, that also to note have reference to the economic sort of regulatory regime that is in place. One thing I would like to emphasize is that we can, you know, whilst we have, you know, quoted examples of what the rate of return might be like in the States or in Australia or in the UK, they are purely for illustration purposes. We have pointed out that, you know, there is no direct comparison as such because every market is different. And it all depends on, as I said, amongst other things, what sort of regulatory regime is in place and what sort of business operation are we talking about?
Sure, but is there anywhere where there is a higher rate of return permitted?
Sorry?
Is there anywhere where there is a higher rate of return permitted, higher than 13.5%?
Well, I must say, you know, as we have pointed out, you know, we've studied various companies, various countries, and the sort of, you know, way that they operate are different, because some only covered just the grid, some covered the generation aspect, some covered, you know, either the retail or the wholesale aspect. So there is no direct comparison as such.
Let's bring in David Webb, the editor of website.com. Mr. Webb, in your view, is this means of determining profit for these companies, is it fair for Hong Kong consumers?
Certainly not. This monopoly has gone on long enough, and the rate of return, which is set in the schemes of control, bears no relationship to the market cost of capital. It was, I think, last really amended in 1978, when interest rates were much higher than they are now. If we're going to continue with a rate of return scheme, then what we should be doing is benchmarking it to the market cost of capital, which would be, for example, taking the 10-year risk-free bond rate and then adding a premium for the risk of investment in electricity assets. Now, the 10-year bond rate is currently around 4%, and you might add 4 to 5% for the risk element, which would take you up to around 8 to 9%, which is probably more in line with international rates. And I would just say this about reliability. I think it's a complete red herring. If you look at Australia, US, and the UK, there is not significantly less reliable power. You don't hear people complaining about living in third world country conditions in the UK or Australia. And indeed, Hong Kong Electric and CLP both invest in Australia, so they obviously regard it as a reasonable market to do business in.
Right, but if you look at China and the Philippines, they have brownouts and blackouts.
They do indeed. They do indeed, and that's related to their rates of growth, their particular geographic conditions, other parameters that Hong Kong doesn't really face. We're seeing very slow rates of growth in our demand here because the population is relatively stable. I'd also point out that we have a very compact geography. You don't have to transport power over hundreds of miles to get to the consumer from the power station here. And in fact, most of us live in high-rise, dense buildings where the transmission costs are much lower. So we ought to actually have lower tariffs than countries like Canada, where you have to transmit power across large distances, and Australia, where you have to transmit coal a long way from the coal mines to the power stations. So, you know, again, there's a lot of things in our favor that ought to have result in lower costs.
We don't have the power companies on in this discussion. They are waiting, particularly CLP pointed out yesterday that they would not like to see any change. That's what you'd expect, I guess, from them to say. But Fred Lee, would you be happy with, say, a 9% guaranteed rate of return?
Of course, actually, the whole scheme, you know, review should look into different angles. This, how much the rate of return is one of the big issue. But, say, 8-9, we have to really think seriously. But other way, because the existing scheme, why we criticize so much, is they only calculate the profit return link up to the fixed asset, and that is already, you know, that's the major problem with the existing SOC. That's why we have to think coming with other factors to calculate the profit. I think that's another issue.
Why is that a problem?
Because you see, at 92, 93, once the existing SOC signed, they already put the power company, especially CLP, already give a green light to go ahead with the new power generator using the natural gas, you know, at Black Point. That is far exceeding the reserve margin. They have 50% reserve margin. That means they overbuild the generator more than we need, but they calculate the profit on that capital. So that is the major problem.
And it also doesn't take into account the different kinds of fixed asset investment, as pointed out in a recent article by Jake Vandekamp, that you know, some assets might have an amortization period of 50 years, and
yes,
that's a lot different than something over 4 years.
I think that the generators, the grid, you know, they have their own life expectancies. They already extend some because of pressure. If they want to make it, you know, change it faster, that means they will gain more profit. They want to build new generator faster than we need. That is the problem of the existing SOC. And mind you, the Green Group always want to push a new variables about the environmental protection, but the renewable energy. Of course, this is expensive energy, but they want to put in the new SOC in order to protect the environment. And as you said earlier, the environment protection is quite good. That is not the case now because the CLP supplying more electricity to Guangdong, and they're burning the coal instead of natural gas, and they get less natural gas as expected. So our air, actually part of the problem comes with CLP.
I know you have to leave now. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. Let's bring in now Annalise Connell from Clear the Air. What's your take on the consultation?
Well, what we haven't discussed here is actual demand management. Mm. Our pollution comes from us using electricity when it's not necessary. Here are two classic examples, both with air conditioners. I have a friend. He lives on the fourth floor. The fellow opposite him blows his hot air from his air conditioner directly into my friend's apartment. My friend would like to leave his aircon off, but he can't. He has to shut his windows and turn his own aircon on. That sort of demand and requiring a reasonable tariff for somebody behaving in such a way just doesn't make sense. We as consumers have to set up our world so that we use less energy. Another air conditioning example is that there are quite a few large office buildings in Hong Kong. They have the chiller on top of the building. The hot air from inside the building is exhausted right next to the cooler who sucks the hot air in and cools it off again. Nobody is managing this whatsoever. Coal is being burned. Pollution is being created because there is stupid energy use.
But is it the job of CLP or Hong Kong Electric to control that sort of thing?
Absolutely. They have the facilities, the power, the expertise, but what they don't have is a financial incentive. In fact, they want us to use more power because that's how they make money. One of the problems with the consultation paper is that there is no way for the power company to make money if we use less energy. And yet the only way for us to clean up our air is to use less energy or use it much more efficiently. And that's the whole idea of demand-side management. And I will tell you, energy companies all over the world are very keen on demand-side management because it saves them a huge amount of money in operating costs. The consultation document does not present any of these concepts, any of these issues. And so it puts the energy companies in a position of not being able to say anything on these issues.
But I don't see how, with the example of the air conditioners, it's not up to CLP or Hong Kong Electric to determine where the air conditioners are. How are they is that going to make a difference?
Yes, they have the expertise. If there's a financial incentive for them to come to the building and explain to the building ownership how they can redesign anything, or if they are given the power to give a building some sort of discount if they upgrade their cooling system. And why should CLP do it? It's because they're profiting from the energy being used. Who else is going to do it? And if we set up their, I don't like to call it the scheme of control, but if we set up the new contract so they actually find a way to profit off of that, then we use the expertise of the people who are the best in the world at doing this to clean up both our wasteful energy use and our air at the same time.
David Webb, what do you think would be the best way to determine how the power companies make their money?
Well, as I indicated earlier, I think that we should be looking regularly at market rates, cost of capital, perhaps on a 5 or 10 year basis, refixing the rate based on the current bond rate, which will fluctuate over time.
I think the average rate for the yield on the 10 year is about 7%. So if you added that 4 or 5% that you mentioned, it puts us back up in the 12% range, which is not far from where we are now.
Well, maybe our figures are different. I'm looking at the U.S. 10 year,
the 10 year
rate, which is around 4.5 at the moment.
I know, but the average over the past 20 or 30 years is much higher. This is, interest rates are at 40-year lows.
They've been low for a long time. They will fluctuate in line with inflation, basically. There are other ways you could look at it besides fixed assets, and that would be to require companies to set prices at a rate of consumer price inflation minus X, where X will be a factor that incentivizes them to be more efficient. But one way or another, you need to link these things to market rates and not just freeze them at 15% for 40 years, which is what's happened.
If you remember back in 1993, we had extremely high inflation here, something like 9%, and we had very low U.S. interest rates. Would we really want to index it to CPI for power to go up 9% a year?
Yeah, well, obviously, if you have inflation, then the cost of buying assets for power generation is going to go up, and so is the cost of fuel. At the moment, the fuel's adjusted in, through another mechanism. But
I guess my point is, wouldn't it be dangerous since we can't control we can't control inflation with interest rates because we're linked to the U.S. dollar and its monetary policy?
We are still linked to the U.S. dollar. Whether that will change, I don't know. But you've got to look at the cost of capital in the market and determining what is a reasonable rate of return on fixed asset investment. I do think, by the way, that it's difficult to expect the power companies to reduce demand for their own product. Yeah. And I'd have to disagree with Annalisa on that. I think what you need to do is educate people on the money they can save by reducing power consumption. By moving their air conditioners, for example.
Wouldn't it also be pretty difficult for a power company? You're talking about investors making investments of several hundred million dollars. Wouldn't it be a little tricky if they don't really know what their rate of return is going to be on a very steady basis to make those kind of commitments?
I'm suggesting that we adjust that on either a 5-yearly or 10-yearly basis to look at the reasonably long-term rate of return. But don't forget that most of these assets are already built. The demand in Hong Kong is only going up at about 3-4% per annum based on the government's own projections. So we're not looking at massive new power stations being built. And that is one of the problems in introducing competition. Now, I noticed that the government has required the companies since 2003 to separate their accounting for the grid and generating assets, which opens the door to the possibility of having a separate grid company and then allowing new generators to attach themselves to the grid and supply power through it. But realistically, given the slow rate of demand growth, it's probably not in Hong Kong's interest to have lots of new power stations being built, because that will just result in wastage.
Otto Poon, what do you think of David Webb's idea?
Well, I think if I could just really look at this whole consultation paper holistically, reliability, safety, pollution, and tariff are the four issues. I think on the tariff side, which is most people interested, the men in the street, households, they're interested, what are they paying? And there have been a lot of discussion about 13.5 or 15%, is the high or low? But again, if you look back, when the scheme of control was signed in the early 90s, I think, as you pointed out, the inflation was very high, the political scene is highly uncertain, and also cost money was high. So 13.5 and 15% at the time was, I think, very reasonable. And also the scheme of control, existing scheme of control, provided a basic framework to look at, to work on the future tariffs. I mean, if we can break up the tariff into three sections, number one, the plant and equipment, that's on the investment side, and number two, the operation and maintenance, which is the performance of the operators, and number three are the fuel costs. Now, if we can, put in certain percentage of profit or whatever, allow for the plant and equipment. I mean, that has to be discussed between government and the utilities. And then also we can benchmark the performance, how efficient they are for the two power companies, and give them penalty or rewards. And the fuel cost at the present time is already adjustable. So it is the fuel go up, going down, I think that there's a profit neutral. So I think if we can look at it objectively, I think we can work out a reasonable new formula or new scheme of control for the years to come.
But it's going to be lower overall than 13.5% because that was formed at a time of high inflation.
I would imagine so. I think because, for example, early 90s, there was a political uncertainty element here, which is no longer there. So at least the political risk is substantially reduced. The risk of the business is substantially reduced.
All right, but we're talking this morning on Backchat about the power companies here, Hong Kong Electric and CLP, and a new consultation document that's come up on the future development of the electricity market. I'd like to hear your thoughts and questions. Give us a call now. We're going to break for 5 minutes for the news. Weather, cloudy with a few rain patches, and it's going to be cold in the mornings tomorrow and over the weekend. 14 degrees the maximum today, 13 degrees at the moment, relative humidity is 81%. Back in 5 minutes.
You're listening to Backchat on Radio 3. Call us on 233-88266 or email backchat@rthk.org.hk. It's your voice.
Welcome back. This is Backchat with Brian Curtis and me, Hugh Chiverton. We're talking this morning about the future development of the electricity market in Hong Kong, the subject now of a consultation by the government. Joining us, we have Annalise Connell, who's Vice Chairperson of Clear the Air, Otto Poon, Chairman of the Energy Advisory Committee, David Webb, who's the editor of website.com and joining us on the line now. Starry Lee, deputy spokesman for the Democratic Alliance of Hong Kong. Starry Lee, what's your take on the consultation?
Well, hello.
Hello, yes.
Hello, everybody. Yeah, well, I think from our point of view, from medium to long term, we hope to achieve is to increase the number of supplier and also the competition and also lower the tariff charge to the customer by increasing the connection of network within the Guangdong provinces.
Okay,
I think this is...
Okay, so there are just two suppliers at the moment. You'd like to introduce another one. Why? Well, how would that benefit people?
Well, I think it can be achieved by increasing the interconnection. That means the interconnection within the Guangdong province. That means the supplier in the Guangdong province can also be one of the suppliers in Hong Kong. Well, I think it can be achieved in medium to long term. Well, of course, it all depends on the development in mainland China.
Would that mean that there'd have to be a grid set up in Hong Kong where both the two power companies were connected and then they themselves were connected with a grid in Guangdong?
Well, we believe it is the long-term way that the electricity market should go, but of course, well, we know it may take a long time to go.
And would that mean then that you could introduce other suppliers that would piggyback on the existing grid? In other words, they would buy capacity and resell it?
Well, it may be one of the possible ways to do this. Yeah.
Well, if it's not that way, what way? You're not talking about a whole separate supplier in Hong Kong, are you? A third supplier? Aren't you talking more about virtual supplier?
Yeah, we believe if we can increase the number of suppliers in Hong Kong, that is ultimately will increase the competition and, of course, lower the tariff. It is the way that we should go in long term. Well, of course, this is how it can be achieved. We believe it can through the increase in interconnection with the Guangdong province.
How would you feel about an independent regulator being set up to regulate the power supply market?
We're open on this issue, but we think currently the scheme of control is one of the effective way to regulate the market. Yeah.
And briefly, would you have a position about what you think is a fair rate of return, and would you keep it annexed to fixed asset investment?
Well, this point I think is the most controversial issue. We're still open on this issue. Actually, the rate of return, personally, I think, should be can have a lot of benchmarks, like now it's fixed the asset, it can be changed to the equity. And personally, I think if it can have some kind of link to the economic indicator, like consumer price index or inflation rate, well, of course, it's not solely linked to that kind of economic indicator, it will be better. But if we're still using the currently linked to the fixed asset rate, we believe it should be substantially lower. Well, we're currently thinking of around like 8%, but the percentage is now artificial because it will change. It has to be changed, and we think it needs to introduce some kind of review procedures to make it more flexible. And of course, and one point I want to add is, if it's still linked to the total asset, we think it is better to, because we understand that currently there's an excess reserve, excess investment of the two supply in Hong Kong. If public can have a will on what is the reasonable reserve that we have to hold, that is, if the way can link to the assets, excluding the overinvestment, then it is fair, more fair.
Okay, Ms. Lee, thank you very much for joining us here on Back Chat. Starry Lee there, Deputy Spokesman for Economic Affairs with the Democratic Alliance for the Betterment of Hong Kong.
Otto Poon, another few issues coming up there. One is introducing a third supplier, breaking the duopoly. How do you feel about that?
I think it's a very good idea. But how practical is that? I'm not certain. Because there are two power companies, one serving Hong Kong, one serving New Territory in Kowloon, and they are what we call vertical integrated natural monopolies. Now, in theory, we can connect the two systems up and even connect beyond Hong Kong into China. I mean, technically, this is absolutely possible. There's no hitch on that. But the fact is that their historical situation, the commercial arrangements. Now, if we open them up the network, what does it serve initially? I mean, will you allow the consumers in Hong Kong to buy power from Kowloon? If that's the case, suddenly Hong Kong Electric will have to close down because everybody will buy cheaper power. And this is not going to happen.
Well, no, right. It would force Hong Kong Electric to lower its prices.
Yes, yes, that could be. I mean, that could be the situation. But
it would also enable us, since we have more power here than we have demand right now. It seems kind of silly giving the power companies a return based upon a fixed asset investment when they already produce more power than what we need. They could sell it on to China. Now that's partially the case now, but Hong Kong Electric can't do it.
Well, I think that you're correct. I think that we're putting pressure on Hong Kong Electric to reduce the tariff, to increase the competition. But I think that's not solve the problem of spare capacity. Because if you look at it, if even some degree or some people in Hong Kong start using the power, China line power, if they want to keep maintain their reliability, their reserve capacities to a certain percentage, they might need to build new capacities, whereas Hong Kong Island, they will have more spare capacities. So I think unless the market is truly open, allowing the both companies to have an open book and work more or less as a joint operation, joint planning, joint operation, I think the additional interconnection would only, in the short term, cost more to the consumer.
Can you explain, Otto Poon, why electricity costs so much more on Hong Kong Island than, you know, a hop, skip and a jump away on Kowloon?
That's a very simple explanation. Mm. I mean, you said earlier on that Hong Kong is a small country. We can't compare with United States or Europe or Australia in terms of total capacity. And we have only about, say, give and take 10,000 megawatt of generating capacity, and yet divide into two power companies. We simply do not have the economy of scale. I mean, Hong Kong Electric is a tiny operation by its international standards, and without the economy of scale, they're inherently more expensive.
I must have to disagree with these premises. One of the comparison cities was San Francisco. San Francisco only has 1 million people. We have 6.8 million people in Hong Kong. Castle Peak is one of the biggest coal power plants in the entire world. Hong Kong is not a tiny place. We are a huge market. We're not the United States, but we're easily the size of the San Francisco Bay Area or the Los Angeles area or the greater New York area. We are a huge market. We are precious to these companies. And the idea that, first, the grids can be connected, they are already connected. There is already a cable that can connect Hong Kong Island to the CLP grid. There is no reasonably prohibitive cost from doing that. There is no reason why we can't have competition. There's also no reason we cannot be following the mainland's lead. The mainland has broken the grid away from the power suppliers. They did that for the consumer. And we are a capitalist city here in Hong Kong, and we should be doing the same thing for the consumer. And the second thing they've done is they've required, the mainland has been requiring their provinces and large metropolises to do demand-side management. Hong Kong is living in a fantasy world. There is a huge amount of progress going on in China right next door. The entire grid, you may be surprised to find out there's going to be an energy glut in about 4 years in Guangdong province based on the installed capacity currently being built. We cannot make decisions inside Hong Kong with regard to two companies that actually have a massive customer base and massive power base and ignore Guangdong province. It's just unreasonable.
Would you be happy if the rate of return was lowered to, say, 10% or so, and then the companies were given a tax incentive, a tax break, for becoming more efficient producers?
Being obsessed with the rate of return is not discussing the correct issues. The policy decisions we have to make is creating an energy policy. What you're talking about is a private contract between the government and certain power companies. this is not the regulatory environment that exists in any other country. It's just a private contract. If I wanted to open up a power company right now, I could. There is no actual monopoly. If I wanted to put a wind turbine on top of my building and try and sell the power, I could, except I can't get access to the grid. So what I'm discussing right now is the fact that the rate of return for two specific power companies is not the issue at hand. The issue at hand is a comprehensive energy policy, including Guangdong Province.
It is, if you want to have an investor. If you want somebody to invest money to do it efficiently, you've got to give them a rate of return, particularly with the amounts of money invested over, say, 10 or 15 years.
The Star Ferry gets a 7% rate of return. They get people to invest at a 7% rate of return. Companies all over the world get people to invest at acceptable rates of return.
Are you saying that the Star Ferry has the same sort of capital investment needs as a power company?
I'm saying that there's money available to invest in these places, saying that there are not going to be investors.
Well, I think the boats are pretty old, but one thing you have to bear in mind is that if the rate of return is less than the rate of the U.S. Treasury bond, then
any rational investor
would put money in bonds instead.
Exactly.
So you've got to offer, and that's why I'm saying you should link it on a periodic basis to the extant rate of return on the long bond, plus a risk premium. Otherwise, if we don't track that, there is the risk that you say, well, okay, it's cheaper to put the money in the bonds than it is to put the money in power assets. But I come back to the point, which is one that Otto was alluding to, is that because of the low rate of growth in consumption here, and I'm sure Annalisa doesn't want to encourage more consumption, it is going to be difficult to see an economic case for building a lot more power stations and having new providers. And the problem with the grid proposal, which in economic theory is good, that we would have a separate grid-owning company and a regulate control on that and then have generators attached to that grid. The problem is that we don't need any more generators and you can't get much competition going when there's only two players in the market.
Well, what about better generators? We have this email from Mike who says, whilst larger countries might have economies of scale, Hong Kong is small, so the distance to carry the power is smaller. However, we have a large number of outlying islands which need power, and this increases costs disproportionately. For example, CLP have just had to bore a 3.3-metre diameter, 5.3-kilometre-long tunnel from Poyo to the south end of Lantau to carry cables into the national park on Lantau to Chung Chau. Now, if the new arrangement allows new energy providers and sources to come into the market, the offshore islands could be used for wind and wave power generation to supply part of the outlying islands' power needs. Whilst there is already a grid in place, these alternative sources could reduce the need for expensive expansions of the system and reduce polluting emissions. One other question, why has the government not introduced insulation into the construction of Hong Kong's buildings? We waste so much energy having to cool warm buildings in summer and heat cold buildings in winter. We could save a huge amount of energy if conservation methods were introduced into building standards, the government giving incentives for developers and construction companies to do so. Thoughts come from Mike.
And here's an email from, or a phone call actually, from Nick. He complained about the way the power companies are spending money unnecessarily. In his view, he says they're renting huge showrooms in the city. What for? They should save the money and lower the rates for the real benefit of consumers. David Webb, back to you. What about an independent regulator that actually had responsibility to consumers and the investors? Would that work?
Yeah, I think there is a case for a separate regulator with expertise in this area, particularly if we do go down the route of a separate grid company and interconnection arrangements, because then you have questions over the fare rates for interconnection to the grid, and you end up with a situation a bit like OFTA regulating the price of the local loop for interconnection with the other between PCCW and the other phone companies. There's certainly a case for much greater transparency. I don't think I've ever seen a copy of the scheme of control agreements between government and these companies. I'm not sure if it's even a matter of public record. If you move to a legislative approach, then you have a much clearer basis for the regulatory structure. So I would favour moving towards that and providing the potential in the future if things do change and if, for example, it becomes more practical to have power companies in Guangdong selling power to consumers in Hong Kong and vice versa. It opens the door then to regulatory evolution over time.
Right, a specific question from Joseph, and this is addressed to you, Otto Poon. Mr. Poon, Joseph says, the China Guangdong Nuclear Power Group has one nuclear power plant, Daya Bay, from which we buy 70% of output right now. The organization already has a second nuclear power plant, Lingao Phase 1. Nuclear power from Guangdong is cheaper than Hong Kong-generated power and environmentally friendly. Why did the consultation paper de-emphasize the possibility of buying more nuclear-generated power from Guangdong in future? For example, the SAR government could enter into a long-term power purchasing contract with the organization so as to ensure continuity.
I think buying power, whether it's from nuclear or other sources, is a very interesting subject. But I think we have to understand that China, mainly in Guangdong, they also need power. Now, if we use all the power from Daya Bay, which is about 2,000 megawatt, and don't give the 30-40% to China, that would mean Guangdong would need extra capacities to supply the consumers, and those energy most likely will be from less clean the sources. And as a result, what we are saying is that we are putting the pollution burden onto China instead of doing it ourselves. I think that's my answer to why not buying more nuclear. Of course, I think for example, if Hong Kong Electric or China in future would need new capacities, and I think Black Point is run out of place, Namal Island is run out of place, I can foresee that the two power companies can build new capacities in China and using a transmission line and fitting them back to Hong Kong.
Can I just say, I think there is a case for the adopting a user pays approach to the environment and the atmosphere, and thereby effectively having some kind of taxation on the emissions from fossil fuel burning, which will incentivize people to use more nuclear and non-emitting sources of energy.
Well, I support that idea. I think we have, I mean, not only Hong Kong, the world has to dawn into the fact that we can't continue with this mode of operation. We have to somehow penalize for those using the airspace as a garbage dump.
Now, I'm curious. Chung Kong Infrastructure is the major shareholder in Hong Kong Electric. They're also a major shareholder in the Zhuhai Power Plant that is as close to Tongcheng as Stanley is. Now, we have absolutely no regulatory control over that Zhuhai plant, but it is polluting into Hong Kong airspace. The scheme of control here is only focusing on Hong Kong Electric as a company inside Hong Kong. This is irresponsible. Chung Kong Infrastructure is doing business inside Hong Kong airspace, and there is no reason the Hong Kong government, though we cannot dictate how they should behave over there, we should be able to say, because you're not giving us the information, for example, on what kind of emissions, we are going to have a different set of rules for you than we are going to have for CLP, because CLP tells us everything. And Hong Kong Electric and Chung Kong Infrastructure should be penalized for refusing to disclose what they're doing into Hong Kong airspace.
Okay, we've got an interesting email from John, who is an energy consultant. He says he makes several points. First, he says the existing model needs to be abandoned. Providing the rate of return against fixed investment is a model for inefficiency. Add another turbine or LNG terminal and guaranteed returns flow, whether they're really necessary or not. On the back of this scheme of control, CLP has purchased facilities across the globe in India and Australia and so on. Andy Connell, he's also addressing you here. He also says, please ask Ms. Connell, a layperson, to stop talking nonsense about a subject she knows less than nothing about. I'm a professional energy consultant, says John, and absolutely confirm that demand-side management does not function in the real world. This is a proven fact here and overseas. Just look at the data over the last 10 years. The power demand here has grown, yet industrial demand and population have fallen. Without doubt, utilities and Ms. Connell are not energy experts and should never be given charge over energy or air conditioning and the like. If her friend, wanting to open his window in summer, should have been more careful checking the premises before renting or purchasing, and certainly this poor property choice is not an excuse to let the utility advise. You can come back in a moment, Andy Connell. He also just adds, regarding the solution, care needs to be exercised. Otherwise, the problems experienced following the deregulation of the grid in the United States will be repeated here. And finally, the Hong Kong people presently suffer the externalities, pollution and so on, discharged by CLP, because CLP is actually providing power to the entire Sheko Peninsula and other parts of Guangzhou. So we breathe the pollution created for Sheko without compensation. That comes from John Herbert. Annalise Connell?
I would be delighted if Mr. Herbert would contact me by email and the Business Environment Council. Much of the information that I'm presenting today has come from the information that they have given me, a highly respected professional body. I would like to see his information that demand-side management has not worked. I would like to see his information that the demand-side management that is being required by China today does not work and that he challenges China's right to do that. I would be delighted for him to contact us, and we could use a lot more expertise and clear the air, and would be glad for him to be a member.
Ms. Connell, you've been on programs here before when we've discussed air pollution. Is it not the case that most of the air pollution, I think it's something like 80%, does come from China, and that a big part of the other percentage is produced by automobiles here? Is it not really the case that power companies are seriously polluting the air in Hong Kong?
Hong Kong-invested power companies are polluting Hong Kong airspace. This is true. If you go to China, a huge amount of Hong Kong money is in those power companies polluting Hong Kong airspace. You can't blame China. It's Hong Kong money that's doing it.
Well, it's growth, though, isn't it? You're looking at growth of over 20% in Guangdong province or around that rate. That is pretty hard to...
Yeah, I mean, I think Chinese people are going to consume power. It's their civil right.
Yeah.
Whoever finances it is another question. But there is obviously, I mean, emerging out of this discussion, a fairly obvious need for cooperation between Guangdong and Hong Kong on a number of areas, including pollution controls, and hopefully leading to a broader electricity market so that we aren't just constrained to a choice of two generators and one small market. But that all interlinks with the question of one country, two systems, different regulatory regimes. And until you harmonize those and arrange for effectively a 100 million people market rather than a 7 million people market, you're not going to get very many efficiencies out of it.
But can that be done by the time this agreement needs to be renegotiated? We're only talking a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, the agreements expire in September 08 and December 08. And one of the interesting things in relation to the basic law on this is that the companies are already hinting at possible judicial reviews and claims that their property rights are being disturbed if different options within the consultation paper are pursued. So that tends to argue in favor of modifying the existing scheme rather than having a massive restructuring, for example, where we required them to inject their grid assets into a jointly held company. They would say that's sequestration of their assets in some way.
Now, we don't have to renew these contracts at these particular times. These are private contracts with individual companies. We can take our time. ExxonMobil should not be dictating to Hong Kong when we're going to decide what our energy policy ought to be.
Why is ExxonMobil dictating that?
CLP is majority owned by ExxonMobil, a U.S.-based multinational corporation.
Castle Peak Power Company is 60% yes. owned. It's one of the two
Black Point
units.
As well, correct?
Yeah, but not CLP Holdings.
No.
Well,
Kadoris would take issue with you on that.
Well, I still say that ExxonMobil and Chung Kong Infrastructure should not be dictating the speed at which Hong Kong comes up with our energy policy.
If the contracts expire, Otto, without any agreement being reached, then what is the legal situation? Can the power companies carry on producing power at any price they like?
I think it is a very interesting question. I have been giving that a lot of thought. I mean, assuming that nothing happens in the next 2 years, okay, then China will continue to supply the power, and Hong Kong Electric will continue to supply power because people need it. We want to buy it.
It's not apparent to me whether there's a free-for-all after the agreements expire.
Well, at the present time, you can build a power plant if you want to.
There's a natural monopoly because of the network. But yeah. What I'm asking is, could they, at the end of these agreements, do the caps effectively get lifted and they could all double their tariffs if they wanted?
I think they're enjoying a reasonable return. I won't say high return, reasonable for the investment. And if the status quo continues, I would feel that the two utilities would be very happy. I mean, if no agreement, we just get on as it is.
Well, there we are.
Charging the same tariff.
Okay, at some point the talking has to stop and we have to act. But in the meantime, thank you very much indeed. All our guests this morning on the programme to Annelise Connell, Vice Chairperson of Clear the Air, Otto Poon, who's Chairman of the Energy Advisory Committee, and David Webb, editor of website.com.